Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I'm Karen Scetzina, the Infant Medical Director of TIPQC. Today's discussion will feature our two infant poster winners from the recent TIPQC annual meeting. We are grateful to have with us today Dr. Melinda Harris, a neonatologist at East Tennessee Children's Hospital, as well as Dr. Bhuvi Jagadeesan, a physician at Regional One Health. First, congratulations to both of you on your quality improvement work.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Let's start with Dr. Harris. You were awarded best in the infant category for your project, Reduction of Neonatal Unplanned Extubation. Tell us about the project.
So this has been a long-standing project at our hospital. We started working with a national patient safety collaborative many years ago as part of their pilot team for this project, starting with collection of baseline data back in 2017. We started the project in full in 2018 and have just gone on from there. We've had it slow, but ultimately success with the project. But we started with a rate of over 2 unplanned extubations per 100 ventilator days, which was definitely above the collaborative rate and above, obviously, our benchmarking goal. And ultimately, in 2023, we were finally able to drop our centerline rate down below the collaborative rate to about 0.5 unplanned extubations per 100 vent days, which was a huge success for us and our team. We all felt really good because we had put a whole lot of hard work and a lot of different people within our organization had really worked hard at reducing that rate.
Well, kudos to you all for your persistence and congratulations on achieving that improvement. How did use of a multidisciplinary team approach benefit your project?
Well, it takes a lot of different people to try to look at a problem like unplanned extubation and find solutions. Usually an unplanned extubation is multifactorial, and certainly our rate was multifactorial. There were a lot of different components that went into why we struggled so much with this level of extubation within our unit. And we knew that we could have an impact on our babies by dropping this rate. So we tried to gather as many people around the table that had a hand in it to get their ideas and to see what suggestions they had. And we were very fortunate that we had, along with providers, of course, we had nursing, respiratory therapy, radiology, supply chain, quality, all sorts of people coming to help us and help identify ways that we could improve in this area. That approach, having at least one representative at the table, has really been impactful. We have struggled over the course of this project off and on with having an increased rate and then dropping again. And usually that's been because we've had turnover in those areas. And once we kind of have everybody on the same page and make sure that everybody's throwing out the concerns or the questions they have about what's going on with how we secure endotracheal tubes and how we maintain their integrity, that has really been the most helpful thing for us, I think.
So, great example of the benefits of using and engaging a multidisciplinary team and the challenges that can occur when you have team member changes. I wondered, are there any other challenges that you faced in your project? And if so, what was your approach to overcoming them?
So because of the length of our project right now, we've encountered some very interesting times in healthcare in general. So having to run a quality project like this, a longitudinal quality project like this through COVID, was a challenge because we basically were shutting down in-person meetings. It was difficult at times, especially in the beginning, where there was limited personnel available to collect data and to get good quality data about why things were happening, to be able to get good apparent cause analysis done. And then following that, just with staffing shortages that everybody's going through and staffing turnovers, trying to maintain the level of education we need within our unit and the level of competency, most of all, among all of our bedside providers, was a challenge. And so it has made us go back to the beginning of the project and re-educate and re-emphasize and continue to try to maintain the culture of the unit surrounding this particular problem to basically hone in on these details and try to emphasize the important things we've done in the past and also continue to find new ways that we can engage staff and identify holes in the process.
What advice do you have for other hospital teams tackling similar projects?
I think the biggest thing is just making sure that when you start the project, you identify who the key players are and have those people at the table. Those are the people you need to be able to identify from every perspective what issues could come up throughout the course of that project. And then as the project goes on and you identify other key stakeholders, so for instance, when we started the project, radiology was not at the table. But as we gathered data and identified issues, it became very important for radiology to be part of what we were doing, not only because of risk of having unplanned extubation during imaging, but also because the quality of the x-rays we were getting were so impactful for where the endotracheal tube was left positioned. And so improving our x-ray quality also reduced our rates of unplanned extubation because we get to find more reliable positioning of our endotracheal tubes. So that's just an example. Kind of keeping that in mind as the project goes on, get the people you need at the table. And then the other thing that I think was really helpful for us is being able to do this project alongside many, many other NICUs around the country and being able to share collaboratively, much like we do with TIPQC within our own state and how we're doing with the Tennessee Tiniest Babies Project. But at a national level, it was great to be able to get other people's ideas and to share our own and to be able to come back together and get resources from other people, share those questions, share those concerns, share the frustrations, and then that sort of thing over time. So those to me were, I think, the most helpful parts of our project so far, which is continuing to be ongoing.
Thanks so much, Dr. Harris, and congratulations again.
Thank you so much, Karen. It was great to chat about our project.
Next, Dr. Jagadeesan, you received the top poster award for the MD-PhD ED category. Tell us about your project, Optimizing Golden Hour in a Level 3 NICU, which is based on your work at Regional One Health in Memphis.
Thank you, Karen. My project was about optimizing golden hour in a Level 3 NICU. We've been working on it historically too, but we did take a small break over COVID, focusing on other quality improvement projects. During that time, we noticed that the time required to admit a baby and start the initial transition of maintaining sugar, temperature, getting a PIV for the baby, those times were increasing, and our hypothermia numbers were also increasing slowly. In order to minimize that, we wanted to optimize the golden hour within our level 3 NICU. We initially paid attention to our admission because our L&D and the NICU are in different levels. And there was a delay in admitting the babies to the NICU from the L&D because they have to be moved from the ground floor to the second floor. So we optimized by starting this L&D admission card. One thing which we noticed initially during the first few PDSA cycles is we optimized the L&D admission card. But with that, we actually had an increase in the time required to admit our babies. it increased from 24 to 27. That helped us understand the actual process, where it's not just the L&D card, which the nurses would call upstairs to, but more so with from a clerical standpoint as well, where education to the clerks helped us to build time. We got to a point of, we decreased our time to around 26 minutes at this point, and we are working towards increasing further. Another place which we wanted to focus on is a smooth transition right after birth with respect to the sugar and starting IV fluids for these babies, for our preterm babies. And in order to maintain a good euglycemic environment for the baby, we started to get PIVs in the delivery room. And doing that, we were able to minimize our time to start IV initially from 53 minutes to 42 minutes, which is almost a drop of 20% from baseline. That also decreased our time to start IV fluids, thereby providing the dextrose water for the babies and maintaining normal glycemia. And that temperature, that time dropped from 82 minutes to 69 minutes, which was a 15% drop. All this being said, with maintaining a smooth transition into the golden hour period can have an effect on the short-term and long-term effect of these preterm babies. During this time, we also noticed that our admission hypothermia numbers decreased. It decreased from 21 to 15% in the year 2022 to December 2023. So we did get a lot of help from our nursing staffs and our support groups, like nursing staff, clerks, radiologists, and our X-ray technicians who would come in specifically in case if we're not able to get our peripheral line. We did get a lot of help from them. And what we figured out during this quality initiative was it is not just developing this QI process, but it's more of coordinating with multiple team members and trying to implement the initiative, which will help us get a better number or improvement on our outcomes. We did face challenges in having good coordination. We are still working on it. And in order to improve the team coordination, we have implemented Bright Start Checklist. And by Bright Start Checklist, we are trying to have like a flow sheet. That way we can try and have a structured approach to a smooth transition into this of this golden hour for our neonates.
Thank you for sharing all those details. I wonder if you had any additional comments about how use of a multidisciplinary team approach benefited your project.
Like I was telling before, our initial PDAC cycle was use the L&D admission cards, and we noticed that our time to admit, which was 24 minutes, actually increased from 24 to 27 minutes after implementing the admission card. And what we noticed was the clerk education was missing during that PDAC cycle that actually contributed to increase in the time required to admit the babies. So once we got our representatives from the clerk's standpoint, we were able to decrease those admission time as well. In addition, when we were talking about starting this PIV for the babies in the delivery room, we had a lot of pushback about trying to get the PIV downstairs in the delivery room, and why not do it upstairs in the NICU in a more controlled environment. Our nurses are experienced, and they can get a PIV very quickly with the first attempt. Once we provided a lot of education for our nurses, they were comfortable doing it downstairs instead of doing it upstairs. And this came up with the help of our nurse educator and our nursing leader, who were promoting trying to get this PIV downstairs in the labor and delivery unit. For babies who we were not able to get the PIV downstairs, we have an umbilical line standby team, which would be a fellow or another person or nurse practitioner who is able to place an umbilical line. In that situation, after placing this umbilical line, to minimize the delay to start the dextrose water in the umbilical line, because there's usually a delay after starting a line to get the X-ray to confirm the position, we did the education with our X-ray technicians and also our charge nurses to give them a call give them a heads up so they're ready as well to get our x-ray done. So it was not just the physicians and the nurses per se, it was more of a multidisciplinary approach. The nurses, the clerks, the x-ray techs, residents, and students who are playing a role in decreasing the time required to admit the baby or even providing care during this golden hour.
Thank you. Those are some great examples of engaging and supporting a multidisciplinary team to really work together to achieve some impressive outcomes. I wondered, were there any surprises in your data, and how important was use of data in your project?
We did have a lot of surprises, especially during the babies who were born during the nighttime regarding starting IV fluids or even like glucose checks at that time. We noticed a significant delay, maybe like 5 to 10 minute delay in all our indices. But the one thing which helped us minimize that was, again, education for the night team from our nursing educators and also our nurse leaders.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us and sharing your impressive quality improvement work at the annual TIPQC meeting. All of the TIPQC annual meeting poster presenters developed a 3-minute video presentation, which are available on the TIPQC website. We will also include that link in the show notes. Congratulations again, Dr. Harris and Dr. Jaga Desan.
Thank you, Karen, and all of TIPQC.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org, that's TIPQC.org, and click on podcasts to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.